say. You have to keep taking it to get fixed.
Okay, let's learn this long tesis that we were discussing last week. The Gemara says, Tesa Midbeis 9b1, the top tesis. Okay?
Kol Hayetze.
The Gemara explained that when the soldiers went to David HaMelech's war, they would write a get to their wives, right? And Rashi has one opinion, we'll see. Let's see the tesis inside. Pirish Bekundris, Rashi says, if you notice the top Rashi, okay, of the page, so Rashi says, what's the purpose? Shem Yamas B'Melchama, okay, if you look in the Rashi, then in case the person will die, Yeh get mishas ksivasa, the get will be retroactively from the time we write it, and Uriah died in the war. So therefore, when Uriah died in the war, retroactively the get was effective before David HaMelech was with Bathsheba. Right? That's what Rashi says. Pirish Bekuntres, Shem Yamas Bamuchama, if the guy dies in war, the get will be from the time of writing. So now Tesis says, so what's the benefit from that? If the guy died, he died, so she can remarry. If the get is a get, then she can remarry anyway. So Tesis is going to try
to... can get married to her now. As he leaves to war, immediately he can have...
No, that's not the way Rashi learns. Rashi says clearly that the get is written that if, when he dies... it's retroactively a get. Okay? That's it, right? Rashi doesn't say because the husband might not come back. Rashi says one thing and one thing only. That why did they write a get? That they wrote a get in a way that if the guy dies, it becomes retroactively a valid get. Now, if you think about it, if it's a get, she can remarry. If she's a widow, she can remarry. So what's the purpose of the get? So Rashi implies that if the guy doesn't have any children, so then there's a problem with Yibum, right? The sister-in-law, the brother-in-law has to marry the soldier's wife. Soldier went to war, doesn't have any kids. Soldier got killed, correct? So if he has no kids, and if you think about it, most soldiers were very young. So it's very possible they didn't have any kids. Mm-hmm. So then there would be a problem of Yibum that the brother-in-law would have to marry the sister-in-law, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes there could be a problem. He's not around, it's difficult, or whatever. So Rashi says, what do you gain by doing this get? So if the guy dies, the get becomes retroactively from the time you wrote it, so then she's a divorced woman. And therefore she wouldn't have to do the mitzvah of Yibum.
Oh.
That's what Rashi says, clearly.
No, we are reading that into Rashi.
But that's what Rashi says. Im yamas b'muchama, ye get me yam ksivasi. Then it will be retroactively a get. But if the guy died, so she could remarry anyway. What's the difference?
So that's the only...
So the only thing, the only benefit would be Yibum. So Tesis asks in Rashi, we can see in it right now. So... the only guy that would have to write a get would be the guy that didn't have kids. If a guy had kids, why would he have to write a get? If the purpose of the get is only for Yibum, mm-hmm. to get out of Yibum, so then the get should have, it should only be good, it should only be done by a guy that doesn't have kids. And the Gemara's expression is, Kol ha-yoytzei l'molchemes. Anybody that goes out to David HaMelech's war wrote a get. What's the purpose of it?
Can I say it's a historical what? Question?
Historical question?
Yeah.
What?
Wasn't Rashi around when Tosfot came up with these kashas?
No.
But I think it was a grandson.
First of all, not all Tesis is Rashi's grandsons, number one. A bunch of them were. Secondly, Tesis wasn't actually written until the Meramei Rutenberg. Who compiled Tesis the way we have them today?
That I know.
The Meramei Rutenberg.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was the later. Rebbe of Rush.
The father-in-law of the Rush. And the Rebbe of the Rush. It was later.
Oh, he compiled
it. Yeah.
So none of these things, kashas, came up while Rush
correct.
Was around.
Correct. Okay. So, Bekosha, Tesis says, Bekosha Rabbeinu Tam, Dim Cain, my call Hayetze, why did everybody that went to war have to write a get? im loy mahani, if it's only going to help, lemisha en lebanim v'yesh leyibum. Only if a guy doesn't have any sons and he won't have to do yibum, that's the only advantage for the get. So why does everybody have to write the get? Okay? It's interesting because Taisus in Bab Mitzi and other places, Taisus adds to Rashi, it also is good for igun. And Taisus is going to say it here also. It also is even according to Rashi, there's still an advantage. If the guy doesn't come back, and you don't know if he's dead or not. It's like this, the woman can't remarry because maybe the husband's still alive. But if he doesn't come back at the end of the war, then the get is retroactive, so she could remarry. But Rashi doesn't say that, though. If you look into Rashi says that if he dies, that means we know he's dead, it's good retroactively for the get. Mm-hmm. But so it says in the Mishnah, in the Perek of Gittin, Mahi be'esen ha'yomim. What is the woman in David HaMelech's battle? It's interesting. The guy wrote a get before he went to war that if he doesn't come back, she's retroactively divorced, right? But during the war, what status does that woman have?
She's married.
No. Yeah, you're right.
So the Gemara asked the question, Mahi ba'esen ha'yomim. What is she in between those days from writing the get and not coming back from war? And Rabbi Yehuda says, "Arehi ke'eshes ish l'chol devarel." She's mamish married, a full stage married woman. V'koy amay d'ktoni l'me'il, and that is referring to what the Gemara said before that. If a guy says, "Arei zegitoch me'ayim emesi," what happens if a guy says, "This is your get today if I die"? So then, if he says today, then when he dies, it's retroactively a good get. Right? Even though he says from today, the get is effective. Have a ashes ish gemur. It's a real ashes ish. Like the Gemara explains. Ba'emem esa shani ba'elam. From the time I'm in the world, I have to read it and explain it. Pirush da'ayda omer me'ayim. When a guy says a get from today, he doesn't mean that it should be effective today. When a guy says, in other words, the Gemara explains it like this. I have to explain, let's go through this. This is fundamental for Ksubis also later in the Gemara. It's important to know. Dead people can't give a get. That's a given. In order to divorce your wife, to give a get, you need to be alive. Dead people can't divorce. Okay?
You had that in that family.
Okay. So how does it work if a guy wants to divorce his wife 1 minute before he dies? Because if a guy gives a get to his wife and he says, listen, even if he says from today, if I die, it doesn't mean from today if I die. It means a minute before I die, the get should become effective. Because if a guy says, this is your get after I die, if a guy gives a get to his wife, and he says, this is your get after I die, then when does the get become effective? After he dies. Dead people can't give a get. So it's worthless. What does the guy say? He says, here's your get today when I die. So the Gemara over there explains, what does that mean? It doesn't mean today. It means, when I die, the get should be effective 1 minute before I die. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says, what is the woman in all those days between the get and the dying?
Married.
A married woman. Because the get is not effective from today. It's effective 1 minute before I die. Right? So Taisus, how could Rashi say that it means that the get is effective retroactively from the day you wrote it, when the Gemara says clearly that even if a guy gives a get to his wife and he says today, I'm giving you the get effective today before I die, it's not effective until before he dies. So the question, how could Rashi say it's effective retroactively from the day he wrote it, when the Gemara clearly says that she's an Ashes Ish, she's a married woman, and not only that, all the days, the get is not effective until a minute before he dies. I'll tell you when, by the way, I'll tell you when people would do that. Again, for the Yibam problem. A guy was happily married, yeah? But he was sick. Okay? He didn't have, like, today, doctors. People were sick. They knew they were dying, right? But he didn't want to divorce his wife. He loved her. Yeah, they wanted to stay married. But the problem is he had no kids. And who knows where he has a brother. In those days, the men had many wives. We learned in the Gemara cases, a guy had one wife from one city, had another wife. Guys had traveled a lot, yeah? He would have a wife in one city, he would have a wife in another city. And they had kids, they didn't even know of each other. There's no communication.
Jews?
They're talking about Jews.
Sounds funny.
No. 1 second.
Before 1,000 years.
No, I know.
Before a minute, you allowed that many, a few wives?
Yeah, but...
Okay, so guys, let's say, traveled. There are a few months in this city, a few months in that city, a few months in that city, yeah? So they had a wife in each city.
The wives knew?
Who cares?
No women lived there.
They knew they didn't know. What was the difference?
Yeah, back then there was...
No, what was the difference? What was no difference? Now, let me ask you a question. If a guy had a wife in a different city, yeah, in a different country, and they had a kid, okay? Then there wouldn't be a problem, and the guy dies. You wouldn't have to do Yibam. Right? The problem is, the husband might have a brother that he doesn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
The husband might have a brother that he doesn't know about. Right? Yeah. Now, if this guy is married to a woman and they have no children, when he dies, yeah, it might be a problem for that woman to remarry. Because, number one, maybe there's a brother overseas. Or maybe the guy knows he has a brother overseas. Correct? But there's no way the brother's going to come here and do Yibum on his brother's wife.
So what did they used to do?
So what did they do? When they felt that they were dying, they would, or not even, they would write a get. And this to protect the woman, by the way. They would write a get to the wife. And he'd give it to her. And he would say to her, this get is effective 1 minute before I die. So what happens? When he dies, the woman's not a widow that you need to do Yibum. The woman is a divorced woman. So the brother-in-law doesn't have to do anything with her. So she could remarry as a divorced woman.
All right. You know, it would be a problem with Mamzerim also.
What?
You don't, the guy goes and has a child in somewhere else, there is a girl and there is a boy, they may meet.
Yeah, but they would find out. It's called the Liverite, something like that in English.
Marriage.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, so Taisa says.
So if he doesn't, you know, give her the get, she can't marry? But I thought Cohens are allowed to, you know, marry widows.
Yeah, but if the woman, if they died without children, the guy's brother has to marry her first.
Yeah, but...
Or give her what's called chalitza with the shoe trust.
How does this guy know if he has a brother?
But he doesn't know if he has a brother, then she can't...
Well, the question, then we have to question if we assume... But if this guy knew he had a brother in a different country...
He knew
that he had a brother in a different country.
Right.
So then, if she would be a widow, she couldn't marry anybody because she would have to marry this guy, do chalitza.
Yeah,
and then she might be stuck for life.
Okay.
So by giving her... But he doesn't want to divorce his wife. But he wants to do it for her protection.
So if she gets married...
I remember in Australia, I mean, it happened after I left Australia, but there was a bachur that was younger than us. We were teaching him. And he got married, and he never had no kids. He never had any kids. So to save him from the problem of Yibum, he gave a get to his wife to be effective 1 minute. He got very sick. He died. He died very young with cancer. But he gave a get to his wife... I wasn't there anymore, but I was a boch anyway. He gave a get to his wife to be effective 1 minute before he died, that there shouldn't have to be a problem with Yibum and Chalitza and all that stuff. He did it to protect, for the benefit of the woman. So Taisa's question on Rashi is, number one, If it's only for Yibum, why does everybody have to write the get? Only a guy that doesn't have children should have to write the get. And secondly, he says, Rashi writes that retroactively from the date you wrote the get, it's an effective get. So Taisa says it's not true. The Gemara says it's only effective 1 minute before you die. That's why Rav Yehuda says that what is that woman all in between those days? Be a married woman. By the way, which poses, according to Rashi, a worse question. How did David live with Bathsheba?
That's the question I had last week.
Right.
So during that time, he's being not a tzaddik. Then, when he dies, then becomes a tzaddik.
No, okay, we'll see in Taisus, what Taisus learns.
That was my question
last week. The get was effective then, when they gave a get. Last week we learned it.
I know.
Okay, but Taisus says like this. Meal, yesh l'chalik, you can differentiate. If a guy clearly says, from today, then it doesn't mean from when he dies. If a guy says, this is your get when I'm in the world. It depends on what he says. If a guy gives a get to his wife on the condition, the get should be effective when I'm in the world. What does he mean by that? There's no question what he means is right before I die. That when I'm still in the world, the get should be effective. What happens if he says, this is a get today when I die? Then Taisa says, maybe even the Gemara would admit that it's retroactively, like Rashi says, from the time of the writing of the get. And he says like this, even if he says, Ma'ayim, yesh l'ashi pirish akund, you can answer Rashi, the lav davka pirish im yomus ba muchama. It doesn't only mean if the guy died in war. Because like, what happens if the guy didn't come back? What did Rashi say? Rashi says the get of David HaMelech's army was that if I die, the get's retroactively good, right? What happens if he didn't die? Or we don't know if he died. We don't know.
Yeah, you need witnesses.
So therefore he said it doesn't mean if he dies. Taisa said what it means is, Elohayu Masin, the condition was, not if he dies. He said, Im lo yachse min al mochama, if I don't come back from the war. That means, the guy says in the condition, this is the way he learns according to Rashi. What was the condition of David HaMelech? Not that if he died. He said, if I don't come back when the war is over, then the get is retroactively good.
Meaning if I'm a guna.
That she's not in a guna. And then Rashi says, just the normal language, Rashi says, im yamas if he dies. Why? Because most people that don't come back in war, they die. Because tam mishay nochezim min al mochama, a person that doesn't come back from war, why not? But the truth is, who adinim nishpa? The same thing would be even if he got captured. In the old days, war they took prisoners and they sold them as slaves. You don't even know where they ended up. They would take them, to who knows what countries. Therefore, when a guy says today, it kept me from the day before I die. Why? Because if he's taken into captivity, he never died. So the get would never be effective. Mm-hmm. So we must say that in David HaMelech's battle, today means today, retroactively from today, not from the minute before I die. Because then it wouldn't be a get. If the guy's captured, he's still alive.
Otherwise, they gave a get. That's it.
That's what Taisus learns. Rashi doesn't say that. And that's funny why Rashi learns like that, though. Taisus is going to explain soon. Taisus said, you went to war, you wrote a get. There was no conditions. You wrote the get. You came back, you wanted to marry them. If you want.
You wouldn't have a problem with David HaMelech.
Right. According to Taisus, everything is settled. Because according to Taisus, what Rabbeinu Tam is going to soon learn, when they went to battle in David HaMelech's time, they wrote a total get to the wife, no conditions attached.
There's no source that we know what they did. I mean, a little bit more clear, or
no? The Gemara is not. That's it. The Gemara just says what it says. They wrote a get kirsis lishtei. So Rashi learns what does it mean. They wrote a get on a condition.
Get kirsis lishtei.
That's it. Gemara says he writes a get.
That's like Tosfot. Tosfot says no. They just was ridiculous.
Yeah, but Rashi is explaining the Gemara that it was given on the condition that if he dies, the get is retroactive. So Tosfot, one second. So Tosfot asks a bunch of questions. Because in the Gemara, it doesn't imply that it's retroactively good. It implies it's only good a minute before he dies. Right? And then obviously, what does it mean? And then the Gemara says she's a married woman that whole period of time. That means David HaMelech, who lived with an Eish Yisish.
But does Rambam say Rambam the Paskin
something? No. Just the road again. You write the road again. So he says like this. Now, Vimtayma Tesis asks a very different question. The problem was Uriah came back from battle. So the get became nullified. What was the get to coin to Rashi? The get is, I'm giving you a get if I don't come back. That means if you don't come back, the get is retroactively good. Right? But if the guy comes back, according to Rashi, it was never a valid get. Right? According to Rashi, I'm saying this is a get only if I don't come home. But if I come home, then it's not a good get. The fact was, Uriah came home, if you read the story, not in the movie, but in the books, Uriah came home during the war. That means he nullified the get. So then David HaMelech really was with a married woman. And not only that, how did he stay married to Bathsheba? If he lived with a married woman, you can't marry her.
So what happened?
If you live with a very married woman, oh yeah, you can.
Even if the husband dies, you can't live with her. Right? So, Tosfos asks a question, how can Rashi say that if I don't return the get is retroactively good, but the fact was Uriah did come back. V'mteimag, arechazer Uriah, her husband Uriah came back, v'n his batal get, and the get shouldn't be valid anymore. V'yashlema Tosfos says like this, but the condition was not if I don't come back, if I don't come back at the end of the war. And he came back in middle of the war.
Oh, what?
Uriah, what happened was, Uriah came back in the middle of the war.
Ali.
And then David HaMelech sent him back. And then he got killed. But Tosfos asks, if Uriah came back, so l'cheira, if the condition was, if I don't come back, but he came back, so the get should be nullified. Mm-hmm. So Tosfos says, no, that's not what he meant. He meant, if I don't return at the end of the war. So therefore, when he came back in the middle of the war, that didn't break the condition. The condition was, if he doesn't come back at the end of the war, and Tosfos says, and Itaka didn't come back at the end of the war because he got killed. He came back in the middle of the war. Right? Mm-hmm. But then David HaMelech sent him back and he got killed. So therefore, he did fulfill the condition because the condition was he never came back at the end of the war.
In any case, if you learn that they gave a get, they can give a get. Doesn't matter if
you come. But that's not, that Tosfos didn't say that yet. That's the way Tosfos learns. Here and in Shabbos and what you call Bar Metzia. It's Tosfos in a few places. Tosfos learns that, some people want to say like this. Why does Rashi say what he says? That was on the condition. Because Rashi learns, Tosfos himself alludes to it at the end, by the way. If a guy really gave a get to his wife, and he went to war, what's stopping his wife from getting married to somebody else?
Nothing.
So it was a risk. Giving your get a wife when you... Giving your wife a get.
It wasn't optional. They had to, right?
No, they did it.
But I thought it was only good if he dies.
That's if the get is on the condition. But if the guy gave a get, which one opinion says, he didn't give a get on the condition. He gave a get and he says, you're divorced, that's it. Now, from now, you're just divorced. Go, goodbye. In fact, Tosfos at the end is going to say an interesting point. They never gave it publicly. It was privately, a private get.
Maybe that's why.
Why? Because then everybody would want to marry the woman. And she might find somebody she likes better than the husband.
Yeah, but I thought if you do that, you have to do it where it's a minute. So you're saying you don't have to, you just give them a get.
Most gets today are given without any conditions. No, not today.
Back then.
Today, 100% of gets, they don't allow any conditions today in a get.
Can you have a condition in a get?
Huh?
How could you have a condition in a get, except in the case of war? What, I'm divorcing you if this?
And the condition. The whole gitten is full of cases of
the
conditions.
That he dies.
Or a guy says, I'm giving you a get on the condition you jump off the roof, or you don't go to your father's house, or you don't, whatever. They used to make crazy conditions.
So this guy came back in the middle of war, right?
Right.
Why? Is he his wife?
He missed his wife's cooking.
Is he his wife? And then David sent him back right away. But did this guy know what was going on at the time?
I don't know, maybe
he
did.
Everybody knew what
maybe
was going
he
on.
Did. We'll see. It says everybody knew about it.
I mean, that's why Torah says a man who just got married for the first year shouldn't go to war.
She was married a long time with him.
No, I'm saying maybe that's why Torah says you have to give him a divorce. You don't want to divorce a woman, he's just married.
No, it's only David and Melo's battles, by the way. No other place. It wasn't anywhere else.
When they had gets?
So what happened?
What about today?
Today they don't do it either.
So how did the circumstance, so she doesn't run away with somebody else?
So Taisa said, by doing it privately, nobody knew she got divorced.
Well, privately, meaning...
Why not? She's not gonna tell
she know, but she wouldn't, she was afraid,
what
whatever.
Do you mean
it wasn't public that everybody knew about it. It wasn't the newspapers.
Three rabbis.
Yeah, obviously you need three rabbis, so you can't write it yet. And Taisa says... There's a very interesting Gemara in Bar Metzia. The Gemara says like this. Embarrassing somebody is so bad, it's better to jump into a fire, you know, like Tamar, Yudin, Tamar, there. Tamar didn't want to embarrass Yehuda, she was willing to get burnt at the stake, not to say I'm pregnant from you, right? So the Gemara says over there also, it's better for a man to live to have relations with a doubtful married woman and not embarrass somebody publicly.
To get married what?
To have relations with a doubtful married woman rather than embarrass somebody publicly. The Gemara says they're very interesting.
What's the relation?
Listen. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yechanan says this statement, it's better to have relations with a, not a definitely married woman, with a doubtful married woman rather than embarrass somebody publicly. So I said, where do we learn this out from? Because this whole Uriah, the Bathsheba story with David HaMelech, everybody was making fun of David HaMelech. Okay? And David HaMelech said to Hashem, I don't know what they're laughing about at me. What they did is worse than what I did. Why? He said, because even if I committed a sin, I get killed and I have Olam Haba. But people that embarrass somebody publicly don't have a share in the world to come. So this is what the Gemara says. So David HaMelech said to Hashem, yeah? David HaMelech said to Hashem, I don't know why they're making fun of me. They're worse than me. Embarrassing a Jew is worse than having relations with a doubtful married woman. Why? A doubtful married woman, even if you get killed, okay, you get killed, punishment, you have Olam Haba. These people are not even going to Olam Haba. But over there, the Gemara calls her a doubtful married woman. Mm-hmm. That means Bathsheba was a doubtful marriage, but not a definite. So Taisa says, "V'nichal lepirush zeh." It's understood according to this interpretation. Hodam minin perek azov. What the Gemara says, "Mometzia neach leila adam." It's better for a person. Sheyivol suffocation. They should have relations with a doubtful married woman. Vayalbim techaveira berabim. Not to embarrass somebody publicly. And the Gemara, where do we learn it out from? Mihai ma'isa de Bathsheba. The suffix Eishes Ishu. So you see, the Gemara calls Bathsheba not a definite married woman, a doubtful married woman.
What does that mean?
Huh?
Doubtful?
Because maybe he'll come back, maybe he won't come back.
So Rashi is right.
So according to Rashi, that Gemara makes sense. Why does the Gemara call her a doubtful married woman? Why does the Gemara call her a doubtful married woman?
Because it
Because it was on the condition. If he comes back or not come back. So then, in between is a doubt. But the way Tosis learns that a guy divorced his wife definitely, no, why does the Gemara call Batsheva a doubtful married woman?
Now, why would people embarrass them if they know she was divorced?
Right. That's also a valid point.
The Dilma.
No, the Dilma Yachsim and Muhammad. Maybe he'll come back from war, so then the get won't be valid. No, then she'll be an Eishes Ish. But Rabbi Tam Mefarish and Rabbi Tam learns differently than Rashi. He says, Kesev get krisis legamri b'loy shum tanai. Okay? There was no conditions. Tosfos says, Rabbi Tam said, a guy went to David Melech's battle, he wrote a get. So now Tosfos asks on himself, so why does the Gemara call her a doubtful Eishes Ish? She wasn't even married. He gave her 100% get. Okay, it was a definite divorced woman. So why does the Gemara call her that Batsheva was a doubtful divorced woman? According to Rashi, it makes sense. It was given on the condition, right? So maybe the condition would be met. Maybe the condition won't be met. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, that says she was a 100% divorced woman, so why does the Gemara call it a doubtful married woman? And this is an interesting thing. Bamer Rabbeinu Tam, the Korla Suffolk Eishes Ish, because Megashim Bitsino. They divorced privately. So publicly, people didn't know if she was married or not. It was like a doubt. Shloha Yadnei, that they didn't want, V'yikavsu Olem B'nei Hodam Lekachem, that other people would come marry the woman. Because don't forget, the din is, if a guy marries a woman and divorces her, and she marries somebody else. Last week's Pasha, we just read on Shabbos. She marries somebody else, and the second guy dies and divorces her. She cannot go back to the first husband. So the husbands were afraid. Right? I'm going to divorce my wife. No conditions. 100% divorce. If I do it publicly, you know, these not proper people are going to come and do kedushin with her. Right? And then I won't be able to marry her anymore.
But where is the doubtful here? There's no
doubtful
doubt.
Was
because people don't know.
Huh?
If people don't know, they think it's definite.
Yeah, but Tosfos says the point is that it was doubtful because people didn't know for sure that it was divorced.
It's not a halachic doubt.
Right. Right. Tosfos says it was not a real doubt. According to this, the Gemara calls it a doubtful married woman means because not everybody knew about it. But Tosfos said, one second, there's one, just one last point Tosfos asked in Rashi. Eich bo lahad David HaMelech live with her, maybe Uriah would come back. David HaMelech lived with her, right? Because as far as he, according to Rashi, it was on the condition. Now, what's the condition? That if he doesn't come back, the get is retroactively good. But how did David HaMelech play with fire? Maybe Uriah would come back. And then David HaMelech lived with a married woman. Mm-hmm. And not only we get killed for living with her, because Tosfos says before the expression that everybody knew that David HaMelech lived with her.
And he wouldn't do such thing.
That is on his level. How did he do it? Tosfos doesn't answer it.
Yeah, but he sent her away. He sent her husband away for, you know, for war.
I understand, but maybe listen, not everybody died in war. Some guys came back. Maybe he would come back.
Maybe David knew. Maybe David's supposed to be so powerful.
He didn't. But how did David and Melech know he wasn't going
to
come back?
He's close to Hashem. Right? Isn't he a prophet or something like that?
Yeah, because David and Melech had Torah in his building.
What's he got to do with... I'm just saying...
Wait. David, he was a prophet.
Yeah.
He was a prophet. He knew what
yeah,
was
but
going,
prophets
right?
Don't know everything.
David was the prophet.
What?
He was a nabi.
So he still up the war. He knew what was going to happen.
The melech.
He knew this guy was going to get killed.
He wasn't the classical nabi, but he had the Ruach HaKodesh of the melech. He had the.
Wasn't it since it's tzaddik if he sent some guy off?
No, he was supposed to get killed anyway. The husband didn't act that halachically he was supposed to get killed by David HaMelech. But he didn't kill him. Instead of killing him, he let him go to war and let God deal with it.
What do you mean he was supposed to be killed by David? What?
He rebelled against the king. And a person who rebels against the king is supposed to just kill him. And Uriah rebelled against the king. The husband rebelled against the king. So David, about being the nice guy, he said, I'm not going to kill you. I'll send you to the war and let God deal with it. If God wants you to die, he'll die. David understood, to answer the question of Rashi, that because Uriah was rebellious against the king, he knew that God wouldn't bring him back alive.
So let me ask you, so then, is a man allowed to marry a woman whose husband he killed for good reason?
Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
So he didn't send him away to war so he could marry his wife.
He sent him away to war because he was supposed to die, so he said, let it. But it was that David HaMelech wanted to marry her. David HaMelech wanted to marry her. She was a very holy woman, and they were very great people. We can't learn these stories and with our level of Yetzer Hara.
No, you always hear it that way, so it's interesting that there's another side to every story. Why do you know that side?
You have to understand, the David HaMelech had no evil inclination. Okay, see, we don't know what that means, because we got pretty strong ones. At least I do. I don't know about you guys. But David HaMelech had no Yetzer Hara. Okay, that's the problem when you learn the stories of Torah in a secular way. Okay, you read it that Yosef and his brothers were just a bunch of mean, cruel brothers, sucking blood, brothers that wanted to kill him. And, these people, it's a whole different story. These people are people that had no evil inclinations. There was no evil impulse. There was no desire to do evil.
Actually, it's funny you bring that up, because when I was, reading, last week, it said that as a Torah law, like you were saying, that you can't send your brother into slavery, and if so,
you get killed.
You must be killed. So I started thinking, well, I thought all of the patriarchs knew the Torah before it was written. So if that's the case, there should be no Jewish people. All 12 tribes should be killed. So
the 10 martyrs that were killed at the time of the destruction of the Second Temple was a punishment for the 10 tribes that sold Joseph.
But what was the punishment?
They all died. 10 martyrs were killed by the Romans at the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. And that was why did 10 martyrs die? For the 10 brothers that sold Joseph into slavery. Just God held back the punishment for a few thousand years.
Luckily, I'm a Cohen, I'd be here, but...
No, Levi was a troublemaker.
Was he?
Shimon and Levi, they were the ones that said, let's kill him.
Until Moshe asked people, who stands with me, and Levi stood with Moshe.
Right.
Or before that, because Levi never went outside of Goshen.
You're Levi?
Yeah.
Oh, so am I.
Okay.
We're related?
Yeah, somehow.
Oh, my God.
And we're related to him, too.
Change of status.
And we're related to him.
I know. Okay. It's perfect.
Anyway, so this is the bottom line, the argument between Rashi and Tosis, which, by the way, there's a Hasidic interpretation of this Gemara. The Rebbe Rashab wrote to the Bochrim, the Bochrim Teuchotum, in fact, tonight is the establishment of the Yeshiva Teuchotum, the Chabad Yeshiva in Russia, that the Rebbe Rashab started during the previous Rebbe's Sheva Brachas. So Tezvav Elul was the Siastus, the foundation of the Yeshiva Teuchotumim, which is Lubavitch Yeshiva. And the Rebbe Rashab, it's a printed sicha. The Rebbe Rashab said to the Bochrim, Kol ha-yetze l'mochem es beis David, whoever goes out to the battle of God to spread Yiddishkeit, kreisiv get kreisiv li'ishtei, needs to divorce his eish. Ishtei means eish, the fire of his own fire. Mm-hmm. Meaning your own enthusiasm of worldly things and worldly desires. He said, if you want to go fight God's battle, it's a whole long sicha. He explains to the Bochum that if you want to go fight God's battle, you need to divorce yourself from all your desires and all your enthusiasms and all of that. to be able to go to war. And he called the Bachim, Chayoli Beis David, the soldiers of David HaMelech, and they need to...
How do you do that? By engulfing
themselves in the learning of Hasidic philosophy, they actually killed their worldly desires.
Hasidic was an inventor.
Sure. Hasidic started by the Baal Shem Tov.
Right, but King David's way.
No. He interprets the Gemara for the boys. He applied it to the later generation.
Hasidic way of thinking.
It's like, wow, somehow somewhere in this class.
So we have to come 10 minutes to 7 every day.
Okay, turn back a page. There's another Tesis, a little Tesis I want to learn. It's also a very interesting Tesis. The bottom Tesis on Tesis Med Aleph. The Gemara asked the question, why didn't they forbid Bathsheba to marry David? If David HaMelech had relations with Bathsheba, right? Why didn't they forbid David HaMelech to marry her? So one answer they said, huh?
Why should they?
Why didn't the rabbis forbid David HaMelech from living with Bathsheba?
Why should they?
Because if she was an Ashes, she was a Mazana with her.
We just said that she was...
No, that's the Gemara's answer, but the Gemara's question was, why Mipnei Malo Yasru? Okay? And then there's another... So there's two answers. One answer is because Bathsheba was forced.
By David.
Hmm. And therefore, just like she's allowed to stay with her husband because she was forced, so then she can marry the guy. Remember, said it's a big chiddush of that answer. Then she can marry the guy she lived with also. In other words, according to the first answer of the Gemara, not the second answer of the Gemara, the first answer of the Gemara comes out that if a guy, God forbid, rapes a woman, a married woman, and she's not the wife of a kohen, right? So he rapes a married woman, so that woman could stay married to her husband because she was forced. It wasn't consensual, right? But based on that, according to the Gemara, the bottom line is that if the husband dies or divorces her, she can marry the rapist. Because the Gemara says, if you're asur to the husband, shem she'asur lebaal, asur lebaal. Right? She can't stay married to the husband, and she can't stay married to the guy that lived with her, if it's consensual, right?
But if the guy rapes her, what is the penalty for rape back then?
Well, then he would get capital punishment.
All right,
if so she was a married woman. She's a married woman.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't be around.
Yeah, but if there's no witnesses or there was or after capital punishment, you're right. It's a good point. But after capital punishment stopped, then he wouldn't get killed. Today, okay? A guy rapes a married woman, God forbid. Yeah? And then the husband divorces her or dies. Technically, she can marry the rapist.
He wasn't that bad anyway.
No, in fact, what does the Torah say? If a guy rapes a single girl, the Torah says he has to marry her. Well, that's week's parsha, right? He has to marry her, unless if she doesn't want. Why? What does the Torah say? Because in those days, a girl that was raped, nobody would want to touch her. So then she'd stay unmarried. So the Torah says, no, the rapist has to marry her. But I'm saying, that's what we learned from the Poskim, right? Based on that, it would be permissible for her to marry the rapist afterwards. Okay? That was one answer. Then the Gemara's second answer was because he wrote a get. And therefore, she was never a married woman when David HaMelech lived with her, right? That was the... So, Pirsha Kuntres, Rashi explains the question of the Gemara, why didn't they forbid David HaMelech to marry Bathsheba? Rashi says, a lot of witnesses knew that David lived with Bathsheba. So Taisa says, it doesn't sound right. Why? Everybody knew that he brought her into the house, but they weren't 100% certain that he had relations with her. They definitely didn't have relations in front of people. So who are the witnesses? Rashi says, why did they forbid Bathsheba from marrying David? Because everybody knew, there were witnesses that they were living together. So Tanya says, we're witnesses. So how do you have witnesses? Everybody knows she was brought home into his house. But how do you know that they're actually living together? And therefore, the Rabbi learns differently. This is the Gemara saying. If the guy, when he says, she's not a virgin because the door was open, so to speak, Amai layasru leDavid. Why didn't she become forbidden to David? If Davade David hayadeh bavade shenivala, because David Amalek for sure knew that he lived with her. The Gemara's question is like this: if a guy that says she's not a virgin is believed like two witnesses, that's what the Gemara said. So then David shouldn't have been allowed to, because David knew he lived with her. Aval pisha said tshuva. Even though David HaMelech did tshuva.
Why shouldn't he live with her? Why can't he?
Taisa says like this. David HaMelech knew he lived with her?
Yeah.
Okay. Why isn't it Shava and Nafshe Chetich Adi Yisore?
Did he tell other people he lived with her?
He knew for himself.
Right, but how do we know?
But no, the question, why would such a tzaddik like David HaMelech stay married to her if he knew he wouldn't be allowed to? If a guy is believed on himself, a guy comes and says, what did Rabbi Elazar say? Pesach, Pesach, Matzasi, he's saying the girl committed adultery, right? He's believed like two witnesses. That's what the guy's saying. Yeah? David HaMelech knew that he lived with her. So according to David HaMelech, he committed adultery. Even though he did tshuva for a sin, but that doesn't make the woman permissible.
This is before we said
before the answer of the get.
If he did adultery, then why wasn't he killed? He was king?
No, because the fact was he wasn't, because Uriah died. In other words, Uriah died, or she was forced, and therefore she wasn't forbidden for David HaMelech anyway. But the Gemara's question is, if the guy is believed like two witnesses to forbid the woman, David HaMelech knew that he lived with her, why didn't David HaMelech say, I can't be married to her? On his own he should have. Like he says, v'maisa surala, if she would be forbidden for him, lohoya eisa tzadik leichala leisha. In other words, the Gemara asks the question, why wasn't Batsheva forbidden to marry David HaMelech? So Rashi learns the question of the Gemara is, everybody knew there's witnesses that they committed adultery. Right? So then, of course, it's forbidden. It should be forbidden. And the Gemara answers two answers. Either she was raped, forced, so to speak, or there was a get. But the Gemara's question, according to Taisa, is a little bit different. Not because there were witnesses she should be forbidden to David HaMelech. David HaMelech knew what he did. Yeah? David, if she was a married woman, like the Gemara thought at the beginning. The Gemara answered she wasn't, but at the beginning of that, the Gemara thought she was a married woman. So the question is, so how did David HaMelech marry her? So Rashi says, no, because there were witnesses. So he says, who saw that? Nobody. There were no witnesses. They didn't have intimacy in front of witnesses. Mm-hmm. So Taisa says, the Gemara's question like this. David HaMelech knew he lived with her. David HaMelech knew he lived with her. So if David HaMelech knew that he lived with her, why did, even though he did tshuva, but why in the world would David HaMelech, who is such a tzaddik, stay married to her if she wouldn't be allowed to be married to him? That's the
Gemara. Obviously, she was allowed to be married.
Right. So the Gemara answers, there's two reasons why she was allowed to stay married to David HaMelech.
Which are what?
Either because she was forced, or because they were divorced. The husband divorced the woman, and then David HaMelech lived with her, and she was already divorced.
We know it's only one of those, because he wouldn't force her, because that's
no, Rashi says it doesn't mean forcing, raping. The fact that he, as a king, told her to come, she had no choice but to come.
But she had to be divorced, or he wouldn't have asked her to come.
Well, that's the second answer. According to the first answer, he knew, and questionable what he did. But the final answer to Gemara is the real answer. They were divorced anyway. So they went to war. They gave a get. She wasn't married to him anyway.
Where does Rashi say that he asked her to come? She was forced to come.
Huh?
Where is that right?
1 second. No.
Rashi?
Ashkenazi. Konda Chidod explains that David violated because because Bathsheba was a minor. One opinion says she was a minor, therefore that she was raped. One opinion we learned that she was a minor. Sephardic, let me explain to you something. Sephardic Jews, believe it or not, Persians are not Sephardic Jews. They think they are. Sfard means Spain.
I know.
The word Sfard is in biblical text, the country of Spain. The real Sephardic Jews are the Jews that came from Spain. Like the Rambam was born in Spain, then the Rambam went to Egypt, and then to Israel, Egypt, wherever.
So
the real Sephardic Jews were Spain.
Born in Africa.
But a lot of the Spaniards, the Spanish Jews, during the Inquisition, whatever, moved to Iran and Iraq and Morocco.
So the Sephardic were Ashkenazis.
Partial Ashkenazim, but they adapted all the Sephardic traditions. But France, Germany,
this is correct.
Russia is all Ashkenazic.
I also heard Sephardic means people. The Sefer means people who learn Kabbalah.
No, come on, who said?
Boy, I can't wait to tell all my
Persians. But also, most Persians were coming from Spain.
It's just like the Ibn Ezra writes in Chumash that today's Arabs don't come from Yishmol.
No.
Ibn Ezra writes that in Parsha Stoldis. He writes that not like people say that today's Arabs come from Yishmol, they come from Esav.
Oh, so the Romans.
So then
the whole thing is messed up. But Lapel, let me tell you. Today, Lapel, Persians are Sephardic, Iraqis are Sephardic, Moroccans are Sephardic.
But only 250,000 came out from Spain. Right?
When?
1492. That's when it all came out.
When Columbus was a Jew?
Supposedly.
You're saying 1492 when Columbus was a Jew?
That's when the Jews got kicked out of Spain, right?
Yeah. The Spanish Inquisition.
They sent them out.
Yeah, 250,000 of them.
But they were friends.
I don't know how many came out. I don't know. Maybe.
But
you can go back then and say, look, if all the Sephardic is really Ashkenazi.
Yeah, but then, trust me, call them Sephardic. Let them be Sephardic.
They were Sephardic.
Don't mix them up with Ashkenazi. Let them stay Sephardic.
I want to mix them up.
Let them eat the rice and Pesach. Okay, we finished. Let's finish it now. Okay.